All right, we're going to get started here on the Sooners Extra Twitter space for Tuesday, September 20th. Thank you all so much for joining us, whether it's live or in recording or on the podcast later. First of all, we're going to start off reviewing. Hopefully we'll have Barry Trammell and Jenny Carlson here in a little bit. Jenny might be 10 or 15 minutes, but try to talk for the next 30 or so minutes on Sooners football, what we've heard over the last couple of days from Brent Venables, Ted Roof, Jeff Lebby, and some players last night, and then you know what we have seen throughout the first three games of the season. Justin, got to start off with this week, OU versus Kansas State, and Brent Venables going against his alma mater as head coach for the first couple times. He talked a little bit about that today and his relationship with Bill Snyder, what he learned from them and what from him and what their relationship is like now. What to you was maybe the most interesting thing that came out of Brent talking about facing his alma mater for the first time?
You know, to me, I thought it was interesting that, you know, we hear Brent Venables talk about getting a text message from Bill Snyder after the game the other day, after he reached out before the game just to get some tips about going up to Lincoln and that atmosphere. But he said after the game, Bill Snyder texted him and said, basically, hey, congratulations on being 3-0. Now get to work at being 4-0. And then about an hour later, Bill Snyder came back and said, you know, except for this week. Obviously, Bill Snyder going to be rooting for the Wildcats this week, but certainly wants Brent Venables and the Sooners to be successful. He sort of talked about being that this is just another game for him in the way that he's treating the approach, but also realizing and recognizing what he took away from Kansas State, both during his time as a player and his time there as an assistant. He said one of the biggest lessons he learned from Bill Snyder was how to treat people and making them feel like he's important. They're important. Talked about being in position meetings and staff meetings and being asked for input or asked to ask questions. And he said that Bill Snyder, even when Brent Venables was, you know, the low man on the totem pole, talked about Bill Snyder being very open to input, to suggestions, taking everything seriously, even if maybe the person who was saying it, you know, wasn't somebody who you would expect to offer that input. So certainly a little bit of an insight into the way that Bill Snyder ran things and the way that he went about things. But we'll see. Hopefully we can get Justin here.
Yeah, you could tell by the way Brent was talking about him today. And, you know, it's come up multiple times since he got the head coaching gig here. Coach Snyder's definitely a guy that he turns to for advice and definitely values his opinion and his experience a lot. You know, the story that he was saying about the Nebraska game. I'm sorry, I don't know if you had already mentioned that when I cut out or not. Did you already?
I talked a little bit about it.
Oh, with, okay.
The advice and don't do it this week.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I mean, that's just really cool, the relationship that he's been able to maintain with them. I'm sure it's going to be something that'll be on his mind when they go up against K-State this weekend.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But there's plenty to talk about this game, about the game that we saw last weekend. Justin, first of all, looking backwards at Saturday's game, you know, you look at obviously the score, the way that the Sooners we're able to just dominate that game and just take control there. Six, seven touchdowns in nine drives at one point, holding Nebraska on, 11 straight drives, 12 really. I know one of them was the end of a half, although that one wasn't exactly a short. They had six plays there. So 12 straight drives to keep Nebraska off the board. Just a great performance for the Sooners on both sides of the ball, but especially, I thought, defensively, to just continue to show how much growth this team has gone through on that side of the ball. And I think it was interesting listening to Ted Roof yesterday a little bit, but mainly to Brent Venables today, talk about the mindset of that defense and the way that they've approached things, going through this first part of the season.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like the main thing that Roof was talking about is that they play to a standard at OU, not the scoreboard, you know, and so that's why you were seeing towards the end of the game, when obviously this game was essentially over by, you know, second half, start of the second half. The team was still locked in and not giving up much defensively. And I think that's definitely something that they're going to be able to build off of. You know, it's would have been nice if they were put in a more, you know, difficult situation where it's a close game down the stretch and they have to respond. But at the end of the day, this is something they can build off as well. You know, just the amount of focus that they showed for the full 60 minutes. And like you said, I think the defense was probably that's probably the side of the ball that you point to the most and say, you know, that was a really strong performance. Whether it was the new guys that were chipping in, like Jaron Kanaka comes in and gets 10 tackles, forced fumble, recover fumble. General Luala got involved on the defensive line, where obviously the defensive line has already been good this season, but it's nice to see new guys get in the mix there and start to contribute. The secondary getting Key Lawrence back in there. He has the forced fumble, the interception down the stretch. I mean, the group just in general, really strong performance, and most importantly, it was until the final seconds bled off the clock there. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I thought Key Lawrence was fantastic. I actually doing my rankings, I do every week, top five players of the week, and I had Key Lawrence as the top defensive player last week. Just for one, you look at his PFF grades, it was fantastic, 91.5, which was the OU's highest defensively so far this season. Was really good in coverage, especially, and just added an extra dynamic to that secondary that, you know, they missed a little bit while he was gone. Didn't hurt him much on the scoreboard or anything, but certainly wanted to get him back in there. And then, you know, the other thing that really stood out to me about what I was talking about, Brent speaking on the defense, and we'll bring in Jenny Carlson right after this, but was talking about how their mentality had been, their psyche had been scarred up a little bit. He said, knowing that they were to whatever degree scarred up and maybe didn't have a lot of faith in themselves, and to talk about the way that that's turned around just in these last, 10, 11 months or so, or 10 months or so. But certainly you see the difference in this defense now versus a year ago, Jenny.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I hadn't really, I don't think we'd heard that sort of thing from Brent this year. But, you know, I think that that's right. You know, there had been a lot of, I don't know about finger pointing internally, but externally, definitely people wanted more, wanted better from the defense, and probably some internal finger pointing, to be honest with you. But, you know, to come in and to have had, three games against, you know, I think we can all agree opponents that, you know, they're going to be tougher opponents down the line than the three that Oklahoma's already faced. But to have some defensive performances where they were really able to sink their teeth into a team and hold them at bay, I mean, I think that shows some huge development, obviously, on the X's and O's and the physicality and all that, but the mental side too. You know, those guys give up a touchdown to start at Nebraska, and, you know, the Cornhuskers march right down the field, and you start to think, well, you know, maybe this is where the wheels start to fall off a little bit. I'm sure there had to be maybe some of those thoughts within the team, within the players themselves. But then to react like they did and play as well as they did the rest of that game, I think it just speaks to some of the mental changes that have happened that, you know, maybe aren't as obvious to those of us on the outside, but we're going to start to see some evidence of it as the season continues to play out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. This defense certainly has been playing with a confidence that we just didn't see the last few years. And I think we'll continue to see that manifest itself in, tangible ways as the season moves on, because you could see, even though the competition wasn't, the greatest over the first couple games and heck wasn't the greatest in the third game either, although Nebraska's offense had been pretty good to that point, you can still see some of the fundamental changes that have made this defense, so much more effective. We had a chance to talk to Woody Washington on Monday night. He talked about the various ways that they're blitzing and bringing pressure that's a lot different from what they did a year ago. A year ago, he wasn't asked to do that much from his position there at cornerback. You know, we've seen him be much more involved in that side of the game through the first couple weeks. I think they'll continue to do that. It's just a much more broad defensive scheme, a much more varied defensive scheme than what we've seen over the last few years. And I think it's certainly paid off to this point. Now, they're going to get some tougher assignments here moving forward. Heck, it'll start getting a lot tougher this weekend when they face Deuce Vaughn and Kansas State. Even though Kansas State's offense didn't look very potent last week in that loss to Tulane, OU fans know what Deuce Vaughn can do. They've seen it happen against the Sooners. They saw it happen last year when he had that monster receiving game. But, it's clearly a better defense than what we've seen over the last couple years. Justin, wanted to go back to you for a second about that defense. We got a chance to see Deshaun White, and that's not the first time I messed that up, unfortunately. But
I'm glad I'm not the only one to do that, Ryan.
Yeah, I really need to be careful about that one. But Deshaun White was really good early in Saturday's game, which was a little bit of an encouraging sign for the Sooners, given the way that he played sort of unevenly over those first couple weeks, but gets ejected for targeting. Jaron Kinnick comes in there and performs really well, I thought, in his first really extended action there. But, what did you make of both of those guys, and what do you think about that position there, the cheetah position here moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, Deshaun was on his way to one of the better games of his career. You know, he was up to six tackles in the second quarter there, had a broken up pass as well. I think one of those tackles was for loss too. So, I mean, he was playing really well, made a mistake. You know, that's something that he talked about yesterday. We got to talk to him. And he had said that, it's just a matter of keeping an eye on his pad level, making sure that he's tackling the right way, and it's something that he thinks is very correctable. So yeah, he was on his way to a really strong performance. Unfortunately, he goes out, but then also really encouraging was the way that Kinnick played. I mean, 10 total tackles to come in there as a freshman, road environment, a traditional rivalry game. There's almost 90,000 people screaming at you from the stands. I mean, he went out there and delivered, forced the fumble, and recovered it as well. So really encouraging just for the depth of that position. It's a position that the whole team is really still kind of figuring out. Cause like you said, it is the cheetah position, which is, it's new. It's a hybrid role that requires a lot from the guy who's able to play it. So to be able to have someone like Jaron come in and contribute, you still got guys like Justin Harrington as well, who you figure will get some time at that position as well. I just think overall, what you saw from that group against Nebraska has got to be an encouraging sight.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Jenny, going to the offensive side, though, we saw Eric Gray have another really good game, both when he got the ball in his hands. He had 113 yards, two touchdowns on 11 carries, added a couple or one more catch. there. Are we seeing this guy develop? And you know, Marcus Major has been really good again, had a touchdown the other day, has four touchdowns for the season, caught the touchdown also from Braden Willis. Are we seeing Eric Gray, though, evolve from a guy who just has a skill set that they really like and they really like to throw him out there on the first play of the game and such, first drive of the game, into a guy who can, even if he doesn't have to, certainly every game, but can carry the load when he needs to?
Well, I definitely think what we saw in the second half against Kent State and then against Nebraska were definitely positive signs. You know, that first half against Kent State problems this week, against Kent State was concerning. You know, I mean, Oklahoma trying to establish the run and failing fairly miserably against a team that you would think they would not fail miserably against. So once they started throwing the ball, saw that change. But for them to be able to get the run game going when they wanted to at Nebraska, I think that was big. I do think that, I think Eric Gray is going to be helped by two things fairly substantially. One, having a good sidekick. And if Marcus Major can continue to get, you know, a decent amount of carries, I don't know what that number would ideally be, but, you know, if he can get some carries and make it so that Eric Gray doesn't have to get every yard that they get on the ground, that will be big because Eric Gray is undersized for an every down back. To me, that's been the biggest question mark with him is his size. Can he hold up with the amount of hits, with the physicality? You know, is he big enough to handle that at his size? So having Marcus Major or whomever, fill that sidekick role, I think it's big. And I think the other thing is the offensive line making sure it gives him a chance, because he's not a guy who, for the most part, is going to run over a would-be tackler or somebody that is standing waiting for him in a running lane. You know, if he can have some room to operate, that's when he can be at his best. So he needs that help. And that's most running backs, that's true. They like to have a number two and they need to have a good offensive line. But I think the fact that Gray is a little more undersized probably ups the need for both of those things to be pretty solid. But then if those things are going, then I think it gives him a chance to be really successful because he has shown he's got some talent. He's got the skill, the vision, the elusiveness, all of that sort of thing that you'd want. I just think it's magnified and improved if that line and, you know, a helpmate can be there along the way for him.
Yeah, Justin, sticking with that offensive line that Jenny brought up, you know, what did you make of their improvement with Wanye Morris out there? We saw him play the majority of the game on Saturday and certainly look like they got settled in a way that they hadn't through those first couple games.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're able to bring back a senior, a starter, one of the leaders of a group, it's going to be really big. So, I mean, just his return, definitely something that you would hope will help this group continue to trend in an upwards direction. You know, we got to talk to Wanya yesterday, and he was saying that, you know, he had some growing up to do from those off-the-field issues that caused him to miss the first two games. So he really just took it as those 2 weeks off is really just a chance to kind of do some self-reflecting. You know, he was still able to practice with the team, work out with the team, be in the meeting rooms with them, which I think definitely helps, you know, prevent too much rust from building. But yeah, I mean, he looked good. You know, he was able to play 56 snaps according to Pro Football Focus. 67.2 was his grade. So I think it was his highest since he was at Tennessee. Thanks for providing stats for that, by the way. But yeah, I mean, he looked good out there. It's definitely going to be nice to have him out there, just to help with the group continue to trend in the right direction, which they have so far. You know, it seems like they've gotten better every week, and that's even with all these things that have been going on as they continue to rotate guys around and stuff. But it's definitely something they can build on as a group for sure.
It wasn't just that Wanye Morris gets plugged in there and all of a sudden everything's great in the offensive line. You know, McCade Matower, I thought, played his best game of the season to this point by far. He was the number one rated offensive lineman for the Sooners. by PFF. Morris was number two, but Anton Harrison played really well. It just felt like that group came together in a way that they really hadn't through those first couple games. And we'll see if that's able to continue against a team, Kansas State, that can make life difficult on you up front. Jenny?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a great point. You know, K-State defensively, you know, they're gonna try to control that line of scrimmage. And I think that's where, when you think about games that have been close between these two programs over the last couple of years, it's because K-State has, in large part, had the physicality on both sides of the ball to, you know, to make games interesting, at least. So, you know, that's where they're going to try to inflict the most damage, if you will, against Oklahoma's plans, both offensively and defensively. So, yeah, if the offensive line can build on what they did at Nebraska against K-State, you know, I'm not sitting here saying it's the best defensive line that Oklahoma is going to see. I think, you know, Baylor's defensive line is going to be tough. Oklahoma State's defensive line, it looks stacked. So there's some teams left on the roster. Texas defense obviously playing well. I think you got to probably start looking at the defensive line there. There's teams left on the schedule that are going to be tough, but K-State will definitely demand a high level of play from that Oklahoma offensive line. But I think you got to like what you saw out of Oklahoma against Nebraska for no other, you know, reason than I my sense is that Nebraska has at least built up some size and some physicality in the last couple of years. You know, Scott Frost obviously fired for things that did not go well, but I think a lot of Nebraska fans felt like that they at least upgraded some of their line positions. Maybe weren't where they need to be exactly, but I think those were areas that they, you know, a lot of people felt decent about. So you have to think that that was, you know, not a bad group that Oklahoma saw on Saturday up in Lincoln, although the result would indicate overall it was. I think that that was a pretty decent test for Oklahoma offensive line, and definitely for all the switching and for, you know, some lacking moments in some of those first two games, I think it was definitely less the case on Saturday against Nebraska.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And we'll see how that translates here moving forward. But Jenny, want to stick with you as we turn our attention to, you know, one of the big topics of today, which is the future of the Bedlam series. And I don't think that the report from Brett McMurphy was anything that was unexpected by those of us who were, you know, around the program and things and talking to people that are involved. But were you at all surprised at to see that report and the way that it was laid out today?
I mean, I think this is kind of the way that the talk has been trending in regards to Bedlam. You know, over the summer, Big 12 Media Day, you know, we heard Mike Gundy, and I can't remember if Chad Weiberg was asked about this, but Mike Gundy definitely said, hey, listen, we have to be mindful of, you know, how we're structuring our schedule. If we've got, you know, 10 conference games, what are we going to do with our non-conference? What do we have available? What hasn't been already, you know, signed a contract for? Those sorts of things. So definitely not having a very wide open door policy on, you know, what could come of Bedlam. So again, just kind of adding up to, you know, this seems like it's probably not going to happen. I was a little surprised to see, with really no finality in OU's move to the SEC, for that to be something that was fairly definitively talked about, though, by the ADs. You know, I kind of thought that it would take the, you know, OU's exit date before that sort of thing would become, you know, seemingly final. Although I do think it's interesting, one thing I'll bring up is a couple weeks ago before Oklahoma State's opener, I asked Mike Gundy about Oklahoma State playing on Thursday. They like to play home openers on Thursday before Labor Day. And he got to talking about, you know, how the TV partners, how the broadcast partners direct a lot of that. And that's true. And then he said something that really interested me. he made the comment that if in these realigned conferences, as conferences are talking to broadcast partners, you know, could the broadcast partners, and it sounds like the way he was talking, it absolutely could happen, that a broadcast partner might say something like, now, if Oklahoma and Oklahoma State play, this base number would jump to whatever. If a conference, they could guarantee that matchup every year for 10 years, that TV contract would go up by whatever amount. If Texas, whatever sort of matchup you want to say in this realignment, whether it's one of those California schools, obviously they're both going in tandem to the Big Ten, but you know, if there's another Pac-12 school that either one of them feels compelled to play, something along those lines that the TV people think could get good numbers, if they would agree to that, could it mean a bump in that number? So I'm slightly surprised at the timing by this talk today. I'm not surprised that this would possibly be the resolution to all this, but I'm also not thinking that it might be over because of some of those comments about broadcast deals and what broadcasters might try to work in. So I guess maybe what I'm saying is I'm holding out a very small shred of hope that Bedlam's not actually dead.
Yeah, I think eventually it could be revived. I mean, but you look at the future schedules and it gets pretty tough, especially on OSU's side. I think what OSU has, their schedule is full through 2028 with the exception of one spot in 2025. And then in that year, they've also got a game at Oregon. So I think it'd just be really hard to fit it in. OU has a little bit more openings. You know, when you look at some of their future schedules, they filled the one for next year with the Georgia game dropping out with SMU. They do have an opening in 24, but then in 2027 and beyond. But I think it's just going to be really difficult in the near term when you talk about this move happening, which I anticipate in 24 or 25. I just think it's going to be really difficult for that game to find a home fairly quickly. I think eventually, hopefully, people will realize what they're missing here with this, and both sides will decide to bring it back. We'll see if that happens, but I think it's going to be really difficult in the near term, at least, to make that happen. What about you, Justin? What'd you make of the report and just how things stand Bedlam wise here, getting to this point in the conference move over?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with Jenny. Just based off of everything that we've been hearing for the past few months, you can kind of get the idea that it was trending in that direction. But, I mean, it is unfortunate. You know, Brent didn't really give too much insight into his feelings on it today, but he did say that just in general he understands the value of these rivalry games and is a fan of just the rivalries in general for all that it means for the sport. And then just even, like, from talking to fans and stuff, you know, I did an article when this news first broke a few months ago about OU's move to the SEC, and just on both sides, whether it's OU or OSU fans, they were both saying that, you know, they hope that this rivalry will be able to continue because it does mean a lot to a lot of people. So you would hope that eventually later down the line they would be able to bring this rivalry back. But like you said, it is going to be tough with the scheduling. So it's just something they're going to have to keep an eye on. But yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate because clearly you can tell that it does mean a lot to a lot of people.
Here's one thing I'll also add, guys, is that I guess maybe my feeling about contracts and future games has been a little bit skewed by pandemic era football because, you know, we've seen games that got scheduled in a very short amount of time. We've seen games get put off. We've seen games get added. I think it's just said to me that, yeah, those long-term deals, like, schools intend to keep them. I get that. But if somebody said, hey, let's play Bedlam, let's make it happen, you know, I have to think that it would work, that there would be a way to delay some sort of future contract if it opened the door to something like that, you know. And yes, there might be money involved, but guess what? If they play after they're not in the same conference, they're going to get paid some money for that. So yes, it might cost them something, but they're also going to reap something in that regard. So It will be interesting to see if it's able to be finagled in there somehow, or if we do have to wait a while. But again, I guess my perception of what's possible has changed in recent years as, you know, games have gotten scheduled in, you know, days, literally in some instances over the last couple of years. So again, I'm still holding out my hope that it comes back at some point.
Yeah, we'll see if that eventually happens, but hopefully, like I said, hopefully people on both sides get to their senses a little bit and make this thing happen eventually. Just, you know, I think as much as OSU fans want to punish OU for leaving the conference, as much as OU fans, you know, some among them at least want to sort of step away from that and make a clean break, I think it's better for the state if those two teams are playing, and hopefully they'll figure out a way for that to happen. But let's wrap it up here with this. And Jenny, I'm looking in our picks. I see you've made your pick for the week, Justin. I'm not sure if you've made yours yet there, but we'll start off with Jenny, just to give Justin some time to think about it there for sure. But Jenny, what's your pick for this weekend, and how do you foresee this game going?
Yeah, I've got Oklahoma winning, and I picked them to win by a decent margin. I think I went 31-17, 31-13, something like that.
31-13.
Okay, there you go. My thinking is I didn't see much out of that K-State offense last week. And I know that, you know, when it comes to a Big 12 game, a Big 12 road game, an opponent that is, you know, ranked highly, you know, motivation may look a little bit different than it did last week against Tulane. Sorry, I almost said Kent State. I'm completely – Kent State is everything this week for me for some reason. Anyway, but that offense is worrisome to me. I was on the K-State bandwagon a little bit after their first two games. Their defense, remarkable, fantastic. But man, that offense really struggling. And, guys, that's a – I say this with nothing. I'm not saying this in any way, assuming that Chris Klieman is, you know, done anything to make anybody mad at K-State. But when he came to K-State, my thought was, okay, not only has he built a program in Middle America, but he's also gotten great quarterbacks to come in. He's found guys that maybe weren't well known. He's developed them. They've had these great offenses. Look out. Here comes a coach at K-State that can coach up offense. This is going to be transformational for the Wildcat. We have yet to see Chris Klieman do that at K-State. To me, that's one of those sort of, I don't quite get it, things about the state of college football right now. I really thought by now we'd see that side of Chris Klieman's, you know, fingerprints coming through. Who knows? Maybe K-State will come to Norman this week and score like 40 points. I don't think so, but that is a really interesting development that even with a quarterback that they felt like in Adrian Martinez could take that offense to the next level, we still haven't seen it out of K-State. So I've got Oklahoma winning by a couple touchdowns.
Yeah. What about you, Justin? I don't know if you've got a score picked out yet, but how do you see this game playing out?
Yeah, I'd probably go OU about 27-14. You know, for similar reasons as Jenny, I haven't seen a whole lot out of this Kansas State offense that was encouraging, especially last week against Tulane. Just Adrian Martinez, from people that I've talked to around the, you know, in the Kansas State world, seems like they haven't been too impressed with just how, I guess, his lack of risk taking. He seems like he hasn't really let it fly as much as maybe they hope to, hasn't been as dynamic of a player as maybe they hope to get when they brought him over from Nebraska. Obviously Deuce Vaughn is going to be someone that he's going to have to focus on, and I'm sure he's going to have a great performance because he can only do so much to limit a guy like that. But at the end of the day, I don't see the offense being able to do too much. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, Kansas State's defense is going to give some problems. It's going to be the biggest test for OU so far. They got a defensive end in Felix Anudike Uzoma. I'm sorry, that's a mouthful to pronounce. This is a guy who had 11 sacks last season, you know, and he's back in the mix, and he's definitely going to provide a real test for OU's offensive line. The defense in general has 7 interceptions, which is tied for the second most in the nation. So, I mean, they fly around on the field and really make life difficult. So that'll be a big test for Dylan Gabriel, who doesn't have an interception yet this season. We'll see if he can continue that. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a challenge for OU, but at the end of the day, just from what I saw from OU against Nebraska and what I saw from Kansas State against Tulane, I think OU is going to be able to win this one by a few touchdowns as well.
Yeah, and I picked OU to win this game 35-17. I just think, everything that both of y'all said is correct. Kansas State's offense hasn't been, you know, what some of us thought it would be going into the year. I don't think Adrian Martinez has been horrible, but hasn't been fantastic. Deuce Vaughn has been great at times. I think they want to get him more involved in the passing game. We saw the passing game with him be such a big key for them last year in this game when he had 10 catches, I think, against the Sooners. You know, we'll see if that's a bigger part of it. But I just think OU's defense, the way it's playing right now, the confidence it's playing with up front is going to make life difficult on Adrian Martinez, help out that back end in protecting against the pass. We haven't seen any of those big-time coverage breakdowns that have been sort of the norm for the Sooners in recent years. And then offensively, I think Dylan Gabriel, just the way that he's been able to protect the ball, and it's not just that interception number being zero, it's the way that he's done it. You know, even the passes that he's not completing, he is not putting them in a position to turn the ball over. And I think that that's really important. And Kansas State has taken advantage of those things this season. 7 interceptions for them, all of their turnovers coming via the interception. But we'll see if the Sooners are able to maintain that streak on Saturday and stay out of the interception column for what would be the fourth consecutive game. But we're going to wrap it up there on the Sooners Extra Twitter Space podcast, however you're consuming it. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. We'll be back late night after the game on Saturday with reactions to the Sooners game against the Wildcats. That game kicks off at 7 o'clock on Fox. Thank you so much for joining us. You can check out our work every day at Oklahoman.com and every morning in the Oklahoman for the best OU coverage anywhere.